Welcome to the Retro Nostalgia Podcast with Matthew Ramirez, your go-to education and entertainment source for all things 80s and retro video games. In this podcast, you'll learn little-known facts on a variety of nostalgic topics, leaving you longing for the awesomeness of yesteryear. If you're ready for a blast from the past, a tubular new episode is starting now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Nostalgia Podcast, your go-to podcast for all things 80s and retro video games. For today's show, I kind of wanted to stay on the topic that was from our last episode. So if you guys were able to listen to our last episode, I was talking about the video game crash of 1983 and how that kind of affected the landscape at the time and definitely shaped what would eventually become a multi-billion dollar industry that is still going strong today with new consoles like the Xbox One Series X and the PS5. But I wanted to take a look at what the system that kind of launched it all back then, back in the day. I wanted to look at the Atari 2600, you know, the granddaddy of consoles, if you guys will. This system endured a lot during its time that it was out, and it saw a lot of companies come and go, as well as companies that superseded it eventually. Of course, the main company that superseded it eventually was Nintendo, especially in Japan. Atari was never much of a player, but here in the mid-80s, once Nintendo came out in 1985, 1986 nationally, it kind of just skyrocketed and left Atari in the dust, even though they tried to make a comeback here in the U.S. as well. So I just wanted to take a look at some of the history of the Atari 2600 and then just kind of share some memories with you guys and kind of see where the system has gone since, you know, its legacy. It's definitely still a name brand, I would say. And we'll get more into that as we progress in the episode. So starting with the console itself and its beginnings, what I went over last time in the other episode was the Atari 2600 was the first system to feature interchangeable cartridges or ROMs. All right. So before that, it was systems that had games built in. And so they were limited by the number of, or not number, but by the space they had, the RAM, and the space they had to support games that were installed, especially back then when hard drive space and all that was very, very limited. All right, it's nothing compared to what it is now, where we can get like up to 2, 3, 4 terabytes of storage. So once that happened, and Atari was able to popularize the format of cartridges, they kind of took off after they were released in mid-1977. When it was actually released at that time, it was actually known as the Atari Video Computer System, or Atari VCS for short. So the Atari 2600 name didn't come into existence until later on, around 1982, when Atari released their follow-up system, which was named the Atari 5200. And that's when Atari decided to name the original system the Atari 2600 to kind of just keep that consistency and in the naming, right? So it was going from Atari 2600 to Atari 5200. And of course, later on, they came out with the Atari 7800. So they liked having that model of scaling up by the thousands, I guess. So going back to the release of the original Atari 2600, it actually didn't take off right out of the gate. And the large reason for that was the price point. So when it was released in 1977, it was priced at $199. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot in today's currency, but back then, you know, accounting for inflation, it was around $840. So this was not a small price to pay or a small price tag at all for the people that were purchasing the system at the time. And of course, at that time, mainly it was the parents that were buying these for their children, right? So a lot of parents, a lot of adults were really into video games at the time. It was a new thing. It was like a new fad. And it was mainly the children, you know, teenagers that were attracted to it. So they were the ones that obviously didn't have a job. And so it was the parents that had to provide the money, to supply those systems and video games to their children. So what this did was have the Atari 2600 come out to a slow start. So in that first full year, 1978, that the system was on the market, it only sold 550,000 units, which was less than what had been manufactured by Atari, which was 800,000, right? So they didn't get off to the best of starts, and it actually incurred some losses in that first year, which Warner, which owned Atari at the time, had to cover. But during these early years, they did have some success as far as video games. So one of these video games that was successful early on was Adventure, which was pretty much the first action-adventure video game at the time, and was a revelation to those that had just been playing video games at the arcade, where they were used to just seeing a single screen and just movement around that single screen. Adventure kind of changed that and brought more of a fantasy type gameplay into the video game landscape at the time. During this time, it also released other games that kind of buoyed the system and kept it in the limelight. But it really wasn't until around 1980 that the system really took off. And that was when Atari was able to license arcade games that were really popular at the time. So the first of these games that Atari was able to license for a port on the Atari 2600 was Space Invaders. So Space Invaders, arcade classic, of course, was made by Taito, which didn't have their own console. So Atari swooped in, got the rights, and they were able to release a version for the system. And this was, again, one of the hottest arcade games at the time. And it really showed or demonstrated to the people that had an Atari already, but that didn't have one yet, that Atari was serious about getting arcade games into the home. And that a way they could do this was by licensing games. So once consumers saw that, sales jumped up. And this was around 1980. So sales jumped up, doubled, actually. And by the end of 1980, they had actually sold more than 2 million units nationwide. So it was a big success for them to kind of license and get these arcade type video games on their system, even if the games weren't an exact replica. Of course, at that time, the Atari 2600 was pretty hamstrung with the technology they were able to put in there. They weren't able to replicate what was in the arcades. Not to mention that if they were ever to try and make a system that would kind of approximate what the arcade could do, it would be thousands of dollars, right? And as we already discussed earlier, the Atari 2600 being $200 back then was an equivalent of $840 today. So it definitely wasn't cheap at all. And that was with that base technology. Now imagining something that would be like the arcade at home would have cost probably closer to $1,000 back then, and in our money with inflation, probably close to $2,000 or more. So Atari did the best they could with the technology, but honestly, it was enough for a lot of the consumers, and these games were pretty fun, and they were able to continue bringing licensed games from the arcade home. So this continued with ports of games like Asteroids, games like Frogger, games like Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, right? So these were games that were popular in the arcade. And with Atari being able to bring them to the home console, it kind of upped their popularity as far as with gamers. And it allowed them to ship more consoles and sell more consoles and cartridges. So this was all like a cascade once Atari was able to add these arcade ports to their home video game console at the time. So while the video game part of Atari was doing pretty well and selling many copies of cartridges and getting those arcade ports home, the console itself was undergoing some revisions. So the original console actually came with a wood grain finish and had six switches on the top. So this version or original version of the system is known as the Heavy Sixer, because of the six front switches that were on display on the console. Later on in 1980, the difficulty switches, which were originally featured on the front of the console, were moved to the back, which left four switches on the front. So This was a new model of the Atari 2600. The biggest difference, again, just being that those difficulty switches were now on the back of the console as opposed to the front, and they were just four switches now. A couple years later, Atari, when they revised the name of the Atari, so like I said before, the 2600 name wasn't added on until 1982, they released a new variation of the console that still had the four switches, but it was actually all black. And it was the first variation of the console to be named the Atari 2600. And this one is actually also known as the Darth Vader console because it's all black as opposed to the wood grain finish on the sides. And it does not, this one didn't have any wood grain at all, actually. So that's why it's known as Darth Vader, or the Darth Vader model. Finally, in 1986, Atari released another version of the Atari 2600, and this one was released more as a budget line. So by 1986, the Atari 2600 had been out for around 9 years by that point. And by that point, also Nintendo had come out, Sega was coming out with their own console, and Atari had themselves had released the 7800. So this was more of a budget type console version, and it was called the 2600 Junior. This one was the most different from the other models they did, which, again, featured the switches up front, had either six or four switches. Some of them more had the wood grain finish, except for the Darth Vader one, which didn't. The Atari 2600 Junior actually resembled more the Atari 7800, just kind of miniaturized, and it had kind of like a rainbow line on the front and by the logo that said Atari. So this was the last kind of official Atari console that was available at the time, and when it was released, it was released under $50, so it was definitely more for the budget conscious gamer at the time, you know, compared to the systems, which were Nintendo, the 7800 and the Sega Master System, which were, you know, closer to $150 or more at the time. So in that way, Atari releasing 3 to 4 variations of their original console, they were actually, can be seen as the first video game console maker to actually do that. You know, nowadays we have video game console makers releasing slim versions of their consoles, or, you know, pro versions, whatever it may be, that are more powerful than the original base console. But Atari kind of started that trend back then by releasing different variations of the Atari 2600. And later on, it became more of a budget system, but it was interesting to see that and see just how many changes, even though most of them were cosmetic because the internal chips and all that never really changed, but it was still interesting to kind of see how Atari and the system evolved over time. So not to get left behind, talk about the controllers here that Atari had for the 2600. Of course, the first one that comes to mind, probably for most people, is the standard joystick. It's also known as the CX40 joystick. So this is the one that had the upright stick with the one button, the one red button on the side, usually up on the right or left corner, depending on how you held the remote. So that was the most popular way to play the game console. They also had the paddle controller. So the paddle controller was for games like tennis or Pong, those types of games that had characters, or I should say like objects that slid up and down on the screen. Things that could be possibly harder to do with the stick. So with the paddle controller, it rolled, which allowed for better control during those types of games. So those paddle controllers also still had the red button, except this one was on the actual side of the remote as opposed to being on top like it was on the joystick. They also had a driving controller for the system, and this was for racing games, kind of like Pole Position and games like that, that required, again, better control than the joystick could give. For those of you that haven't used an Atari joystick, the joystick itself was pretty firm and pretty hard to get rotation with and do sharp kind of turns and stuff like that. So that's why Atari had to release these types of controllers for games like tennis and Pong and driving games, because the standard joystick just didn't allow that type of freedom in those types of games. They also had keyboard controllers that came out, as well as video touch pads. And eventually, they had actually a control pad that kind of looks similar to the Nintendo controller with two red buttons. And it did away all entirely with like the standard joystick, and it had more of a kind of a stub joystick. And that one was only released for the European market, and with the European 2600 Junior. So again, pretty interesting to see how Atari approached controllers at the time, because I mean, they were the trendsetters. They were the most popular video game console and video game console maker at the time. So if anyone was going to make solutions for any of these issues, it was going to have to be them, especially if they wanted to keep leading that charge early on. And so they did what they could, and they, instead of you know, releasing just one controller, they went with a variety of controllers depending on the type of game that was being marketed by them or that was being marketed by other companies. And they would try their best to kind of manufacture controllers that would work best with those video games at the time. So the system saw its greatest success in the early 80s. So 1980, 1981, 1982, you know, right up until the point that the video game crash happened. That's when Atari was seeing its greatest success. They were selling millions of consoles. They were selling millions of video game cartridges. And again, it had to do with their ports of the arcade hits. Plus, they also had games that they had they manufactured on their own or had third parties manufacture for them. So things like Pitfall, which was made by Activision, that became a huge hit on the Atari 2600. Later on, they had another huge hit was Qbert, which was again another arcade port, and it was a perfect a game to translate to the Atari 2600. Joust was another game, again from the arcade, that was another big hit for Atari on at the home console. Pole Position, another racing, or I shouldn't say the first racing game here that I brought up, that was an excellent game and one of the best games to play still today on the Atari 2600. And again, that was the type of game you would be better off playing with the racing controller than the actual original joystick. So again, once Atari hit those, you know, 1982 late months there, they started to kind of falter with, you know, putting all their money into games that they thought would take off. So games like Pac-Man, which ended up going pretty badly because the translation was very poor. It looked nothing like the arcade game original, and players just were disappointed by it. So that was one of their first mistakes, and it didn't really sell well enough for them to recoup the money they'd invested in it. And then, of course, the big one, which was E.T., which they had, again, invested a lot of money into the movie license because E.T. had really been a big film at the time, and it was actually the number one, as far as how much money it's made, it was the number one selling film at the time. So they were trying to get in on that popularity of the movie, and unfortunately, the higher-ups rushed the game because they wanted it out for the holiday season, and that caused the game to not be as good or as good quality as it could have been. So unfortunately, that game really bombed. Atari had made the same mistake with Pac-Man of manufacturing too many cartridges, and they ended up not selling enough to recoup their money. They had lost millions of dollars. The consumers that had bought the game ended up returning the game because they didn't like it. It was just such disappointment to all the video game players out there at the time. So that kind of led to Atari's downfall. Again, there was a lot more factors that went into it, and I went over those in the video game console crash mark in the, of 1983 episode that I did. But that's just kind of like a general idea of what happened to Atari as a company. It wasn't just the console that went under. because at the time, remember, they also had the Atari 5200 out, so they already had the succeeding console out, and they both went under because of those two gambles they kind of took on video games they thought would give them a lot of money, and it actually ended up costing them millions and millions of dollars, as well as consumer confidence. For myself personally, I have had the pleasure of having an Atari 2600. It was my first console that I was able to call my own and play. I remember my parents bought this one for me when I was probably like 5 or 4. I don't even remember. But it's definitely a memorable console once you've played it. It just has that, I guess even then it even had some sort of like nostalgia factor to it. The fact that you were playing this machine that was kind of legendary in the way, you know, it was the first big popular game console, and it had all the big games at the time. And again, like I said, those arcade ports made a big difference for why it was popular compared to other consoles like Intellivision and ColecoVision. And it really showed in how much games they had that were related to the arcade. Now, again, there were also games that, because there was no quality control, were not as good. But overall, I'd say if you stayed away from those, you had an enjoyable experience. For myself, some of the games that I liked playing were games like Frogger. Frogger was a good and fun game to play. It was pretty simple. Of course, I'm talking about when I was like 5 or 6 at the time. So it was pretty easy for me as a child to get the idea of what I had to do in Frogger. Avoid the cars, get to the end, and get all the way from one end of the lake to the other end, right? So I had a lot of fun with that game. As far as other types of games, I also played games like Space Invaders, which was pretty fun on there. The one thing, though, was the audio wasn't the best. So it sounded very crunchy, if that makes sense with the sound of Space Invaders. Every time the spaceships would move, they would make like a crunching sound from side to side as they moved down the screen. But I mean, it was a great way to play at the time, you know, 1980 when it first came out. And then when I was growing up, it was a great time to play as well. Another game that I really liked was boxing. That was probably my favorite game on the Atari 2600 growing up. Boxing. I was a big fan of the Rocky films at the time, or I still am, actually. I'm a huge fan of the Rocky films. I've seen all of them. I own them on Blu-ray, DVD, everything. These films just really hit me hard. They were so enjoyable and fun to watch. And being able to kind of do that sport in a sense virtually, even as simple as it might have been on the Atari 2600, you know, their graphics were pretty simple. It was just awesome to be able to do that. And I remember spending hours and hours playing just boxing on the system and going against the computer or going against my older brother on there or my cousin. It didn't matter. I just loved that game a lot. And that was probably my favorite Atari 2600 game, hands down. I also remember playing a Spider-Man game. So licensed games back then, a lot of companies were trying to get in on licenses because they figured it would be easy money, right? And so there were other games also that featured heroes. I believe there was a Superman game on the 2600. I could be wrong, but I do remember a Spider-Man game for certain. And that Spider-Man game, from what I can remember, all you had to do was just kind of climb up a building while the Green Goblin was throwing bombs or grenades at you, and you just had to avoid them, and you just had to get to the top of the building. So that's what I remember from that game. And I remember that game actually being pretty hard. I could never get to the top. Again, I was using the standard joystick. I don't know if it was easier using another one of the controllers that Atari released, but with that joystick, I just found it very difficult to control Spider-Man, and having them climb up the building was pretty difficult. Another game I remember was Star Wars. So Star Wars was obviously pretty big at the time. They were releasing the original trilogy still, so at around those times. It was 1980, 1981, 1982. They were just about to release, I believe, Return of the Jedi, which came out in 1983. And so the version of Star Wars that Atari 2600 got was centered around a level on Hoth. So that intro to Empire Strikes Back when they're on the snow planet, and they're kind of escaping the base as the machines are coming and approaching it, trying to destroy the shields and get in there and attack the rebels. That's pretty much what that Star Wars game was centered around, which was different because it was actually a Star Wars arcade game at the time, which was very fun, and I've actually haven't had the pleasure of playing it, but if you guys look it up, Star Wars arcade game, I believe it was 1980 or 1981 when it was released, and it had like the Death Star run and all that in it, but it was using like vector graphics, which was pretty interesting, and obviously the Atari 2600 couldn't do something like that, so they did what the best they could with that. But I remember that Star Wars game still being pretty enjoyable as well. Of course, I played other games like Pac-Man, which, yes, sad to say, it was very different from the arcade, but considering I was, six at the time, I didn't know any better, right? So as long as I was playing Pac-Man, I was having a fun time. And then the last game I remember really have memories of was Donkey Kong. So I remember playing Donkey Kong on the Atari 2600, and I was actually surprised what they were able to do with the graphics. I played Donkey Kong when I was a little bit older, and so I was able to appreciate a lot more just the difference, seeing how the graphics were able to advance even on the Atari 2600. But I remember playing Donkey Kong on there, and I was pleasantly surprised by how the characters looked, how the stages looked, the sound effects even. It was just amazing that they were able to do that on the Atari 2600. So I definitely have fond memories of the system myself, even though I came around at a time when it was already long gone, and I definitely had some fun times with it. So moving forward into current times, Atari and the Atari 2600, they've kind of stayed on the limelight every now and then. Atari's obviously not the manufacturer it used to be, but the system itself has continued to be out in some way, so they've actually been out in a variation of ways with those consoles that have built-in games. So they were actually the first system that I can remember seeing on the market that were called a flashback console, where it was kind of like a clone of the console, and it came with like 40 games installed and ready to play, and the two controllers and stuff. I think they kind of set that trend off. Everyone remembers Nintendo doing it, probably like, 5 years ago now, it seems like, when they released the Nintendo Mini and then followed up with the Super Nintendo Mini and stuff. But I remember Atari doing that early on, like probably 10 years before that even. And it might not have been themselves. It might have been a third-party company that was releasing those consoles with the built-in game. But I played one at one of the electronics stores at the time, I thought it was pretty good. It was pretty well built. The games were, running how they were supposed to. Obviously, they were emulating an Atari 2600, which isn't too hard to do. But I had fun with the clone console, and I believe they're still being made, so it's not too hard to get your own, Atari 2600 now, even though I may not accept, new the original cartridges, but you can always play with the selection of games that it comes with. And of course, it comes with the joysticks, and I believe some of them even come with like the paddle controllers and stuff like that. So moving forward, I think the Atari 2600 definitely has, promising and long legacy. Like, this is a system that's not forgotten. It's still in the limelight. I believe it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. People, when you mention Atari, they still know what you're talking about, And when you say Atari, most of them think about the Atari 2600. Of course, they released other systems later on, some of them which I discussed, which were like the 5200, the 7800, others that I didn't talk about here, which were the Lynx and the Jaguar. But like I said, when you bring up Atari, I think rarely people think of those consoles at first. When the system that comes to mind is the Atari 2600, hands down. I know for me that's the case anyways, and just remembering how popular and that position that they held in those early years, and it just disappointing that we never got to see what Atari could have done if they would have stayed on track with quality control of video game, the video game cartridges, and released hardware that was up to par, especially with Nintendo, which later ran away with the video game market. And who knows, maybe we could have been playing an Atari now, but it's definitely an experience. It's definitely, you definitely get a certain sense of nostalgia, you know, not trying to play off the name of the podcast here, but if you guys grab a joystick and you play an Atari and you play, you know, Space Invaders, or you play Frogger, or you play Donkey Kong, you really get to experience video games in the way that, you know, really aren't experienced now. And it's just, you know, you and yourself and the system just enjoying the time, enjoying your interaction with the video game. And you really get to feel that tactile feel, especially with the joystick, the way it's built, you know, not using a control pad. You really have to be engaged in the video game itself to get the most out of it. So going forward, like I said, I believe the console is going to be still in the popular eye, still going to be in the public eye. People still recognize it, and I think it'll be in the future, whether there's more clone consoles being out, or whether maybe Atari themselves decides to make their own kind of Atari Mini, Atari 2600 Mini, and include some games on there. So as I come to the end here, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I really just kind of wanted to give like a brief overview of the Atari 2600 history and you know, its accessories and some of the biggest games that were out. And you know, I wanted to share some of my memories with it, because I definitely had some fun memories of the system. And you know, it was very popular. I had one, my brother had one, you know, even in the same household, we each had our own Atari 2600s. And I know a lot of other people that had their own 2600. So it was definitely an enjoyable console, and definitely a fun topic to talk about here with you guys. If you enjoyed the show and if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to follow me along at my Instagram at Retro Nostalgia Podcast. That's where I post up all the updates on new episodes. And if you guys want to follow and give me a like, that always helps and lets me know you guys are enjoying the content. And if you guys have any ideas for future episodes of anything you would like to hear, whether it be from the 80s or anything video game wise, just let me know, and I'd be more than happy to, churn out an episode for you guys that will hit those topics. So until next time, remember to be excellent.
You've been listening to the Retro Nostalgia Podcast. We release new episodes every Friday. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and follow us on Instagram at Retro Nostalgia Podcast. Until next time, be excellent to each other.